Welcome back. We got a Hegseth clip for you. Let's roll the clip.
From day one, the defense of the homeland and getting 100% operational control of our southwest border was the number one priority of this department. Yes, now it's codified in our national defense strategy as defend the homeland and the hemisphere. That we eventually did. But from day one, operationally, this department, this building, these services rushed, surged down to the border to stop the invasion of our southern border, which is truly what it was. Yes, there we have had troops on our border for 25 years. You're correct, General. But in many ways, they were down there as window dressing. They were down there with binoculars and no authorities. They were down there as part of just the status quo of rotation of things, the way we did business. And it was often said, well, we need new and different authorities. Sure, we've inserted new authorities, but what we really needed was new leadership and new priorities, and then putting the best Americans after that problem set to get 100% control of the southwest border. So to this group, I say this group is here, the highest levels of leadership in our department, because we recognize how fundamental and important your mission is, how difficult it has been, the challenges you've had to adapt to.
Be nice if we could focus on that instead of the Iran war, huh?
Sets that our generation of warfighters have learned overseas for two decades, and applying a defense in depth on our own southwest border, turns out we're pretty good at it. And when you build out national defense areas, and when you put infantrymen and others down there on the border, securing that fence line, doing named operations, operating at night, operating with drones, counter drones, tunnels, you name it. I read all the operational reports of the types of efforts you've undertaken. You have been dynamic. You have been creative. You have been aggressive. You have used the authorities you've been given. You work with your law enforcement partners. Huge shout out to Border Patrol and Homeland Security. I know you work with them every single day. Their authorities complement yours. Your authorities complement ours, because we're all Americans securing our border and stopping that invasion. And that's why for over a year, there's been effectively zero illegals crossing our border, effectively zero, especially on the national defense areas, because we decided our soil, our homeland will be defended. And we will utilize our troops in those places to do it and give them maximum authorities to ensure that we stop the invasion of our southwest border. And like so many great things, like the name Department of War, it's not a new thing. It's a restoration. It's a reestablishment. We were the Department of War all the way up until World War II, and we are again. Well, this Southwest Border Medal, the Mexican Border Defense Medal, was established in 1918 to stop other incursions and invasions. And so we're not creating something new. We actually revived the exact same medal from 1918 to be given to all of you today as a reflection that this service is an extension. We stand on the shoulders of other great Americans who defended this nation. And it always requires the real 1% to do difficult things at difficult places without enough recognition. And the reason we're bringing you all here is because every single soldier, Marine, and one sailor seated here represents thousands of others who have done this mission on our southwest border and are doing it right now. And we're getting the reports about it right now. And the cartels are having to deal with the realities that they can't cross our border and can't bring the drugs and the death and the human trafficking that they brought for far too long that killed way too many Americans.
Now, if that was a platform, if that was what was going on and we weren't at war and we were actually doing mass deportations and we were actually doing what they ran on, we actually had a border wall, I phenomenal. Right? Great. Give them the medal. But ultimately, it rings a bit hollow to me. And I'm not talking about the service members, what they've done. Of course, that's phenomenal. That's great. They're very honorable. But as far as Hegseth goes, this is just another boondoggle to distract from the war. So they did it. They revived the medal. It is what it is. I'm really happy for the people that received it. But ultimately, we got bigger fish to fry. And I'm having international journalist, respected journalist, Suleiman Ahmed, join me in the next hour to talk about all of that. Really looking forward to that discussion. You're going to want to stay with me. Go to thealexjonesstore.com and get yourself a jacket, get yourself a shirt that's better than what Pete Hegseth got. So go to thealexjonesstore.com. I'll be right back. Thank you. Stay with me.
This sword has tasted blood, and it will taste more.
Welcome back to the War Room, third hour, and because it is the War Room, I've got leading geopolitical analyst and journalist Suleiman Ahmed with me. You can follow his X right there, also Moral Resistance on YouTube. Here's the thing. If you want to know truly what's going on every single day, you got to cover it every single day. You got to have multiple sources, multiple interviews. I try to do the best that I can, but people like you, Suleiman, I mean, this is what you literally eat, breathe, live, and sleep and dream about, right? All the time?
First of all, it's an honor and a privilege to come on your show, Rex. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, look, you need to be on with the news, first of all, relaying the news all the time, which is what we do. And then, as you said, I speak to a number of geopolitical analysts about the issue. I've been privileged to create a large number of contacts within the Middle East from a range of regions, again, to add more information to the news. And then, as you know, I travel a lot to the Middle East to get the news on the ground.
Yes, absolutely. And you were really one of like a very select few journalists that were present for the entire funeral procession, the largest funeral in human history, literally. And people don't even know about that here in the West, but 30 million people showed up to the Ayatollah's funeral. You were there on the ground. You were there on the ground when the missiles started flying again, right?
Yeah, that was crazy. And yeah, I was basically one of two who went to the entire, all three of the funeral processions. And what happened was, if you remember, there was a ceasefire because it was July 4th for America.
Yep.
And the Iranians respected the fact that it was the Americans' 250th anniversary. And then part of the agreement was that there was going to be the Iranian funeral procession. Well, the first 2 days, there was no strikes. And then towards day three, day four, then there became strikes. There were major strikes on Iran. They started striking the southern part. There was also an extremist attack in Mashhad, not too far away from where I was. So yeah, these things were happening. The strikes were happening. Bandar Abbas was struck. Sariq was hit. Ahvaz was hit. I was meant to go to Minab. And then because they were being hit so hard, the planes got canceled.
Wow. And for those of y'all that don't know, Minab is the school that the U.S. bombed literally on day one. That's like the double or perhaps even triple tap attack with the Tomahawk missile. And Trump says, oh, we think Iran did it. So I just want to clarify right now for people that's not true, right?
Indeed, we've got evidence that there were Tomahawk missiles used. We've got the signature of those missiles. It's quite clear it was either America or Israel. Highly likely it was America that used those Tomahawk missiles, did a double or a triple tap on those school children. What does that mean? That means you hit the area, then you wait for people to come help save the people. That could be other people within the area. It could be first responders. And then you do another strike. And this is what was happening. And so you saw the strikes happening on, unfortunately, these individuals and these innocent people in Iran.
And it's just something that can't be denied. Like, this is just the truth. And I want to report the truth. I want to report the news on the show. And I'm sorry if it gives anyone in the audience the willies. Like, we paid for this and we did this. So, Suleiman, what's happening right now? Can you give an update? Because, of course, we've got the Bab al-Mandeb that shut down. Is the Yanbu pipeline shut down? What's the situation? Saudi Aramco on fire. What's going on there?
Yes, yeah, so much news is coming out today. Do you want me to cover Iran first or the Ansarullah?
Go wherever you
Iraq
want.
Resistance.
Okay,
so the first thing is, let's go with Iran. I spoke to people, officials within Iran, and I've been told that there is no direct negotiations happening with the U.S. as per the claim of Trump, but there is information passed on through mediators about a number of issues. Iran's stance is very simple. They are not going to go back to the MOU. They want more concessions from the United States of America. America is saying they want to have the Omani corridor, and they want to keep control of it, and Iran saying that's a no-go. So the chances of there being a situation where they go back to something similar to the MOU, I believe, is very low. So that's the first piece of news for you.
Okay.
That's directly from Iran, from Iranian officials, given to you and your audience. The second piece of news is, and this is obviously, this is already out in the public, the rest of it, what I'm saying, which is Ansarullah hit Abqaiq refinery in Saudi Arabia. I'm hearing reports that that refinery has been taken offline.
Wow.
Saudis basically denied that there were strikes, but we got the satellite imagery evidence that that refinery is on fire, as well as the east-west pipeline is also and was also here. Saudi, this is crazy, Saudi know that Ansarullah did it. Ansarullah came out and said, guess what, we did it. Saudi said, oh, no. You know, you didn't do it. It was Iraq. It was the Iraqi.
It was the Easter bunny. It was the Easter bunny.
Exactly.
Right.
So, yeah, exactly. They were like, no, it's the Iraqi resistance. And then Ansarullah like, no, it wasn't. It was us. Now, why that's funny and hilarious is Ansarullah saying we did it. They're taking credit for it. It was them. But the Saudis are so afraid to deal with Ansarullah, they got to blame the Iraqi resistance. Iraqi resistance did send drones. They sent into Jordan, amongst other places, because they activated now. They even went into Kuwait a few days ago, did a few strikes there and went back. But that's obviously a separate note. It shows the Iraqi resistance is activated. But in terms of Ansarullah, Ansarullah's played a blinder. They've closed Bab al-Mandab specifically to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia isn't able to circumvent the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. Saudi Arabia can't strike Yemen, because if they strike Yemen, Yemen will hit Saudi Aramco, and they did already, as you mentioned, and they've hit the other energy infrastructure. Ansarullah can escalate and start hitting key ports and key areas. So Saudi's stuck because they know bombing Yemen for 15 years didn't work. And what is it that Ansarullah wants? Ansarullah wants freedom. They want their sovereignty. They're saying remove the blockade, remove the siege, let us go to whichever country we want and do what we want. Because there's a blockade on Sana'a. Saudi is an external country. Yemen, Ansarullah, as you call it, the Houthis, are the legitimate government of Yemen. If you look at what they control, they're controlled by 70% of the population. PLC, which is the Saudi-backed, you know where the PLC headquarters are? They're not in Yemen. They're in Saudi Arabia. This is a foreign-backed government.
Okay, so it's more colonialism, basically. That's what they're trying to do.
By the Saudis, because this is what these Arabs do as well. And so this is the Saudi-backed government, and it's the PLC only has control over 30% of the country, and they're essentially a ragtag. And as I mentioned, they're not even within Yemen. But the point being, they've been losing more and more ground throughout this entire 15 years. Ansarullah has taken more and more ground. But the reason, if Saudi was to allow basically planes to go into Sana'a, were to stop the blockade and siege, it means you're legitimizing the government. You're saying, you know what? You are the legitimate government of Yemen. Saudi are going to have to make that move. They already were willing to do that in 2023. So in 2023, there was a deal signed. No, sorry, let me rephrase that. There was a document agreed, but the deal hadn't been signed, where Saudi was going to concede to all those things because they lost the war. But then October the 7th happened, and so the deal was never, ever signed. So no one's asking Saudi for anything they weren't willing to do just 3 years ago. And I think Saudi is going to have to do it. But again, because of American-Israeli pressure, because you know my position on this, I'm not someone who's like, blame America, blame Israel. I blame the Gulf states as much. You know, some people are like, oh, Muslims don't call out these nations. I do. I literally am banned from these Gulf states. I can't go to these countries. My ex account is banned from the UAE. So these people...
Yeah.
So these people are afraid of me. And in reality, I see all of those countries, US, Israel, and these Gulf states working in cahoots together. As you mentioned, colonial powers. You see Saudi doing it in Yemen. You see Emirates doing it in Sudan. So these people are horrific individuals. And we respect the Yemeni people for fighting back for their freedom.
And there's a number of just stunning vulnerabilities in the region, whether you look at the United States and the bases that they have, where you look at Israel, just the entire country is a vulnerability because it's so small and they have two critical refineries that can be very easily taken out. Whether you just look at, like you talked about, the Gulf states that are in bed with all the corruption and cahoots, nations like the Yemenis or like the Iranians can really punish them in ways that when they hit back, it's just kind of like, well, we did gain of function research on these countries. We made them more durable, making them exist under sanctions for decades. So it's really the situation where the conflict, me and you have the same opinion on this. We only see it expanding and going bigger. I want to talk about that. Where do you see this developing? The axis of resistance versus the collective West, I guess we could say.
Yeah, it's a great question. And just to add to your point before I answer your question, you're so right. Israel is completely vulnerable now because the Gulf states were the shield of Israel. They were the defense force for Israel. Their radar systems have been taken out. Their ability for Israel to be given early warning. If you remember, they used to get 15 minutes warning because they were due to the radar in Qatar when there was a strike from Iran. Once the Qatar radar got taken out, that got reduced to about 7 minutes. Now these radars have been taken out. Many experts are saying that their warning's only going to be 1 or 2 minutes. It means they're going to have to live in bunkers. So they're completely vulnerable in terms of where I think this is going to go. I don't believe there's going to be a deal. I don't see any scenario that could be a deal for two key reasons. The main reason, as you know, is for me, Israel. Israel will never allow it. The Israeli lobby will never allow it. Israel wants to expand throughout the region, and they will not allow the United States of America to make a deal. They'd rather US basically destroy yourself than make this deal. This is their last chance in their mind to get what they want. They may not get another US president who makes the same mistake again. And as the US public basically turns on Israel, they know the chance of that happening in the future is a lot lower. So I see this expanding. I don't see Iran giving up as well, because at the same time, you know, I was on the ground in Iran. I'm in the Middle East reporting. I have contacts throughout the region. And if you went to the region, you would see, you talked about those 35, 45 million protesters when a large number of them had red flags. All of those red flags represented what? The flag of revenge.
Yeah.
So they will not agree to a deal. The negotiators have been pressured into the scenario where they've got to listen to the will of the people. And it's very simple. They can't agree to that situation as well. So I don't see a deal happening. What you will have is certain scenarios where, as you saw today, because Trump is running out of basically missiles and munitions, he has to hit and then a point of lull. So we'll always have that where there'll be strikes and a point of lull. Strikes and a point
well,
of
let's
low.
Get
but
into
in
that.
Of long-term, this is
gonna, yeah, well, let's get into that a little bit, because this is what I have a problem with, because I, just like you, I watch, read, cover, talk to sources like the news every single day. And you look at it, we've been hearing that the interceptors are critically low for several months now. And now we're hearing about the precision guided munitions, like the PrSM, like the JASSM, like the ATACMS. We have more of those technically, but it's not enough. In other command centers like UCOM and then Pacific Command, they have to have those things. I don't want war with Russia or China, but if we have these bases, we have to be able to defend them, right? So like they don't have the ability to defend themselves or even accomplish that mission, that objective. We're pouring everything into the Middle East. Eventually, at some point, I know they can drop dumb bombs and literally like Vietnam style, they drop like 2.2 million bombs in Vietnam or some crazy number of whatever it was, but that didn't work. And it just seems to me like more insanity doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And this leads me to what I'm asking, which is the topic of the ground invasion. What does that mean? How could it happen? Where could it happen? Would it be on these islands? Would it not be Americans? Would it be, you know, factions that are paid by the United States, terrorists? You know, that'd be another word for that. What do you think?
Yeah, great question. In terms of the dumb bombs, what you mentioned, I think that's not possible. And what I mean by that is because in order to do that, they need to go above Iranian airspace. They'll get detected and they'll get hit. So depending on the altitude, it's going to be highly unlikely they could do that. In terms of the ground invasion, you know my position on this. I think that if they attempt to do a ground invasion, it's going to be a significant loss of American lives, a significant sacrifice of American lives. Now, the aim likely is going to be pertaining to a ground invasion, one of two. One is to take the islands on the Strait of Hormuz. So likely that could be Karg Island. I think that's more likely what it would be.
Trump is obsessed. He's obsessed with it. He's got it in the brain. So
he has. He mentioned it before. He mentioned it about. So that's one option. And the other option, if he wants to go through the land, I was a big believer that he would go through not the mountains, but basically go through Pakistan. There's through Chandahar. And the reason for that is because when you go through that region, there is a situation. By the way, this will fail. So when I'm explaining this, I'm saying it and it will fail.
Sure.
But the point is, you can basically get onto land. You can take the runways. You can take control of them. You can shut them off. So there's no access to you. So you can come into Iran and take control of the area and basically have a lack of access for the Iranians. But the problem then becomes, What will the Iranians do? The Iranians could just use drones and missiles and take you out. This is the problem you've got. This isn't old warfare. This is just new modern day warfare. And this is the problem they have with those islands, with Karg Island. Once again, it has water, but then you're going to have to bring supplies in. You're going to have to bring, well, how do you get the men into there? You're going to have to lift the men, bring the men in via helicopter, some through the sea. I don't think they could bring it through the Strait of Hormuz. But hypothetically, let's say they were able to bring some through the Strait of Hormuz, through bombing, then you bring some through the air. That is just a difficulty in itself. You'll have basically Iranian drones and missiles hitting you even then. Then you take over the land. Then you have to hope the land isn't booby-trapped. You have to hope that, which it is, you're not going to have to hope that the people, there aren't soldiers on the street, on, what you call it again, Karg Island, which they are. And so they'll be able to essentially trap you. And I do know that the Iranian position in this is going to be that they're going to allow the Americans to go in, and then they're going to trap them. And so you're going to see a significant loss of life. And I do believe that Trump is aware of this.
Right.
And this is why he is a bit allergic to the ground invasion. But you know how it is with escalation. With escalation, what ends up happening is desperation. But as you know, my position on this has always been that I do think that Trump will probably use a nuke before he uses ground invasion. Because I think that he thinks in his mind, let's say there's a loss of, from an American perspective, right? How would Americans react? If there's like 1,000 soldiers that die, maybe people will be angry with Trump, but let's say they use a nuke. I think the anger would be less. So I have a bit of
a different take. I want to hear more about your position on the nuke. Here's what I think. I view it as they need the soldiers to die in order to get the American people angry enough to commit to literally mass recruitment, a return to the draft. They're already running simulations of the draft right now. This is one of the reasons why I'm so anti-war. It's literally, I'm 23. It's my life. They're going to put me on a boat to go get blown up by FPV drone. I'm not for that. That's why I'm so anti-war. But literally, it seems to me as in, like, this is the beginning of World War III. And I want to get into it with you next segment. We have limited time. Zelensky and Netanyahu, like Mussolini and Stalin or something, are meeting Hitler. Like, it's the axis of evil. It's forming right now. And I just want to hear your take on the nuke and why you think that's more likely the ground invasion.
So I agree. What you're saying is very logical. So I'm not even discarding
that
point.
Sure, more theorizing.
Yeah. And I just think that on the balances, I'm not even saying that's not even a possibility. I'm saying a nuke is more likely. But I agree with you. If you want a legitimate ground invasion, you sacrifice the American lives, and you know you're going to create a manufactured consent in order to go for a bigger, larger
this
ground invasion.
This is the
invasion.
Thing. This is really quick. They hate us. They hate the Iranians. They hate the American people. They want all of us to go fight and die for no reason. It's not in Iran's interest, not in America's interest. It's literally we're having to fight this war because of Israel. That's who dragged us into the conflict. Like those soldiers, they died for Israel. It's true. And you post this stuff all the time. I see people give you flack for it. Imagine if a loved one that you had was murdered and then you said that they died in combat helping the killer. Does that not make logical sense to draw that comparison?
Well, it does make logical sense. And look, let me be clear on this. I have no negativity towards people who join the army. I think it's wrong to do so. I think it's evil to do so. But look, I come from a very socially deprived area. Even in the area that I'm in, which is not so very socially deprived, but it's got a lot of working class people. A lot of working class people, even in the UK, they think, okay, let me join the army. It's going to give us it's going to give us a career. We didn't get the exam results we needed. And so even in my daughter's school, the it was like 80, 90% of the children are going to join the army. So those kids are not doing it because they want to murder people abroad. They're doing it because they think, look, this is a career path. You know, this is going to be the only opportunity. I'm going to learn engineering or these type of things. And, I'll get a job afterwards. So I don't see that as negative, but the problem is that what happens is then these children who grow up are then used for evil. So you saw that 19-year-old who got killed. I feel bad for that kid, but who got killed. But that being said, what was her job? Her job was to actually facilitate the murder of others. And that's where the problem lies. For too long, those in power have used the working class in our countries to do their bidding while they sit in their ivory tower. Our working class people are being used as fodder, as cannon fodder, to die for, as you mentioned, Israel's wars. And that's the major problem. And so these people are not dying for their country. These people are not dying for Israel. I mean, are dying for Israel. And it's important for us to let these people know so that people realize that actually when they do try and do the draft, as per what you say, or they do try and build up the military, as per what we know that they're going to try and do, that people realize that when you're doing this, you're not doing this for the United States of America. You're doing it for Israel.
Right.
And so people are aware of it. And so I think that that's the major issue that you've got, is in terms of the military.
They never should have been there. That's the key. There's no reason for the Americans to be in bases around Iran. Why did Iran put their country around all our military bases? Like, that's literally that's like the elitist neocon attitude in the U.S. And like, that's just simply not true. We should be here at home. Like, my position is very simple. I honor the dead by telling the truth about who killed them. And it wasn't even, you know, necessarily our government. We're literally beholden to a vassal state of Israel. We don't control our own foreign policy. It's a reality that more and more Americans have to wake up to, and you have to accept it, because it's just like being addicted to drugs or something. You can't quit until you realize you have a problem. And I really, that's how I describe the U.S.-Israel relationship, is we're on their dope. That's kind of what it is. And until we get clean and go through that cold turkey process, we won't ever truly be free. I want to talk to you about Netanyahu, Zelensky. I want to get into all of it. I want to just ask you really quick, because we got like 2 minutes left in this segment. Is it true that Iran is going to pay for all of the damage that they've done? Is that true? Like, are they going to pay financially for closing the strait, or is Trump going to seize more of their money? How's that going to work?
No, it's not. It's actually going to be the other way around. In my contacts within Iran, and I've been blessed and privileged to have contacts within Iran at the highest levels, are telling me it's the opposite. What's going to happen? What's going to happen is the MOU deal, as we see it, is not something that Iran is interested in anymore. Iran wants more. Iran wants more demands. And some of the things that they're thinking about adding into the new version, because they know Trump is desperate. Trump, once again, was begging for a deal, begging to go back to the negotiations. They want Gaza in there. They want Yemen in there. And in terms of do you remember the frozen assets?
Right.
They accept that they basically trusted the Americans, in the sense of not trusted them. They keep saying we didn't trust them. But the language was a bit vague. And so what it did was allowed the Americans to slither out of the deal and not really pay any frozen assets. So if America comes back to the negotiation table, which they are desperate to do so, the demand is going to be pay us first. So it's going to be America paying, although it will be Iranian money. And overarchingly, by the end, obviously, America will pay. But the deal is very simple. Iran's position is very simple. We don't accept the MOU deal as it is anymore. You need to make more concessions because you've not achieved your objective. And you saw that yesterday, right? It was Admiral Bradley Cooper, I believe. Or was it Dan Cain? I think it was Admiral Bradley Cooper, who basically said, we bombed Iran for these 13, 14 days and we didn't achieve anything. There was no utility.
Right.
And this is him saying it. The reality is, this is what we've been saying, right, Rex, for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Everyone's been like, oh, America's bombing. And we've been like, look, they just keep bombing the same area, the same region. They aren't hitting military assets. They're not hitting
military
bases.
They're under mountains. They're underneath giant granite mountains. And like, we're dropping bombs on empty sheds. That's basically what it is. In fishing boats, just like Venezuela. So
100%. And so if you're not degrading Iran's military, but you're using up your own bombs, your own rockets, your own missiles, you're going to be in trouble. And you mentioned, for example, you know, JASMs and various other missiles. The thing is, you need to go closer for them. And again, to get in closer, US doesn't want to go to do that, because what you've seen is, as the US continues to get closer, more and more drones get taken out, more and more aircraft get taken out. They don't have as much standoff munitions left, and they don't have any defense interceptors. And also, in terms of the defense interceptors, I had Ted Postel, MIT genius professor, and he said the only success rate is 1% to 2%. So it's an open season for Iran. They're just hitting their targets very precise, wherever they want, whenever they want. I was told that they're going to attack the barracks in Jordan, of where the US soldiers are. And within an hour, you saw it, a direct attack at the barracks. This is the precision that they've got.
All right, stay with me. Suleiman Ahmed, international journalist. I'll see you here on the next segment. Moral Resistance, follow on YouTube. Thank you so much.
A microscopic tag being implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix. Graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here, is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Collins saying 21 years ago that, oh yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha ha ha, wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away, not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more, scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting that at the, you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health, what it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatic when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
I am anti-slop, I am pro-real news, and I am pro-humanity. That's the mission here, stopping the war, stopping the genocide. We're getting back into covering the world, growing global energy war, World War III, World War IV, whatever you want to call it. But really quick, I just want to play these two clips of Trump and Hegseth claiming that we don't have air defense, Suleiman. Let me do that again, really quick, just trying to cut a clip here. I want to go ahead and show you, Suleiman, Trump and Hegseth saying the Iranians don't have any air defense. Go ahead and play the clip.
And other people, other countries too. We're not the only one that never did anything. They were the bully of the Middle East. And now we're leaving Iran with no Navy, no Air Force, no anti-aircraft, no missile capability, no nuclear program. We're leaving them without any nuclear capacity, and they've agreed to that. And we're getting along quite well, although if you read the fake news, you never know. Think of it. The fake news, they have no army, they have no navy, they have no air force, they have no anti-aircraft. We can fly over Tehran just at will. Nobody gonna do anything to us. And then I read the fake news that they're doing quite well. They're not doing quite well.
Iran has no air defenses. Iran has no air force. Iran has no navy.
their missiles, their missile launchers and drones being destroyed or shot out of the sky. Their missile volume is down 90%. Their one-way attack drones yesterday, down 95%. And as the world is seeing, they are exercising sheer desperation in the Straits of Hormuz. Something we're dealing with, we have been dealing with it, and don't need to worry about it. We're on plan to defeat, destroy, disable all of their meaningful military capabilities at a pace the world has never seen before.
Yeah, don't worry about it, Suleiman. What's your take on that?
That's just completely delusional. First of all, they've got no missiles, but they're decimating Kuwait, Bahrain, Jordan. They've got no missiles. That's why Israel's too afraid to join the war. Then you look at their defense. You see it every single day where they were taking out MQ-9 Reaper drones that were getting too close, worth $4 million to $6 million. And such as they left, if they've got no radars, they've got no defense, why isn't it Trump's not going deeper into Iran? Why is it he's restricted himself to the south? Is it because they're afraid of Iran's radars? Are they afraid of Iran's defense missiles, which they are? This surface-to-surface missiles, the surface-to-air missiles, that's what they're afraid of. And so if you look at Trump's strikes over the first 15 days, what? Oh, sorry, 13 days, what was it? It was striking on the coast of Iran because he's too afraid to move in deep. Why? Because of the radar systems. The missiles, you've seen them become extremely effective to the extent where Smotrich said, well, we're not going to join the war. We're going to leave the war for Iran and the United States of America because it's quite clear that Iran's missiles are potent, are very strong. And actually, I was told this. This was about 7 to 10 days ago. I was told that they are planning major strikes. And the plan was to strike on Israel. The plan was that it was going to be new missiles that they've never, ever used before. But then what happened was, obviously, I knew about it. So I'm guessing Israel found out about it. And that's why they got cold shoulders and they didn't join the war. Trump was meant to escalate the war. He got cold shoulders and didn't join the war. And in reality, the evidence is the opposite. The United States of America is running out of defense interceptor missiles. They're running out of munitions. I mentioned it earlier. Ted Postel, MIT professor from the United States of America, confirms their defense is only effective 1% to 2%. And they are running out. They have none left. This is why you've got a scenario where, and we're going to talk about Zelensky, but this is why you've got a scenario where there's trying to be a merger of the fronts. America is in trouble. And they want out, but Israel won't let them.
Wow. Wow. And that's the thing. Larry Johnson, CIA, 31 years, basically never wrong. Ted Postel, MIT professor, you name it. Just a number of other leading experts have just said there is no air defense. Their defense is a joke. Talking about ours, not the Iranians. Of course, the Iranians have destroyed 43 of our aircraft, I believe is the number so far in this conflict. That includes MQ-9 Reapers. That includes the KC-135s who got blown up as well. I mean, it's just, it's a complete horror show and it's only expanding. I want to get into this now. Netanyahu, Zelensky, scheduled to meet with Trump amid global conflict. So they're on the way to the White House, I guess. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky are among the world leaders planning to come to Washington for Senator Lindsey Graham's funeral. You can't make this stuff up. And Netanyahu, I saw him comment on this. It's fitting there's a black spot on top of his head right there. I saw him talk about this. He says Lindsey Graham is one of, or was one of Israel's greatest friends of all time. So he gives him like mythological status. And I kind of see this, you know, Suleiman is kind of a trope. You know, the mafia or the mob, they'll have a meeting at a funeral, right? And they'll decide the hit. They'll decide what needs to get done. What do you think is going to go down at the White House when you have like the demonic Keebler elf and the evil cokehead dictator Zelensky and they come together meeting Donald Trump?
Well, both wars basically is being supported, funded, financed by the United States of America. And you mentioned Zelensky. Zelensky is a Jewish Zionist. Netanyahu is a Jewish Zionist. Both of them have been pushing war. And what you've seen with Zelensky is desperation. He's losing the war in Russia. There's major Russian advancements on the ground. And so what's happened is because he's realized he's been left out, he's been infusing himself and trying to bring himself into the war in West Asia, the Middle East. And so, as you saw, there was a vessel coming from Russia to Iran, which was fired upon by Ukraine. And the reason is very simple. What's the logic? Why would he do that? He's losing the war in Russia. Why would he try and bring another front? Well, the reason is simple, because then he infuses himself into a more important war. And maybe this brings the Americans, the Zionist Americans, on board to try and support his war, because they've been, people have been moving away from the Russia-Ukraine war. They've been moving away from the support of Ukraine. And so what you're seeing is, as per what you mentioned, both of these individuals, Netanyahu and Zelensky, Lindsey Graham supported their war. He was one of the biggest advocates for them,
yes,
despite being on the right. And so what you're seeing is what you just, I think you characterized it excellently. They're going there to decide what the next hit is. They're going to be going there. They're going to be trying to realign. And you're going to see, once again, I do believe, the United States of America going back into kinetic war with Iran after the visit of Netanyahu and Zelensky.
Yeah, I do agree. Crew, can we go back to that Telegraph article? Because I want to point out the propaganda in that headline. I want to show you why it's important to watch real news like what me, Suleiman, Dialogue Works, Judge Napolitano, Daniel Davis, and so many other people do. Go back to that Telegraph article. I'm going to read the headline. It was something like, Trump is going to deal, or Trump caught between Zelensky's wish for peace. Are you kidding me? And Netanyahu's thirst for war? Suleiman, I've watched a wide variety of experts, even on people like Mario Newfall. People don't say Zelensky's wishing for peace. That's crazy. That's wild.
I don't think he's wishing for peace, but I do think that he's desperate for a deal, because what he's seeing is completely decimation of his country. You're seeing Russian advances. You're seeing the Ukrainians not being able to even stop any of the Russian strikes. When you look at every single day, Kiev is on fire. Kharkov is on fire. Yesterday, it was Zaporizhzhia that was on fire. So he is struggling. He is seeing the writing on the wall. And if you saw it the other day, he made a statement. He said, I think it was Laura Loomer who was interviewing him. And he said, and again, another Zionist influencer he brought on for his propaganda campaign. But one of the things he said there on there was, she asked him, would you go to Trump to make a deal? He said, yeah, I would go to the White House to Trump to make a deal, because they are desperate for the deal. But the Russian position is, there is not going to be no deal. We tried many times. You guys broke the deal. Remember, in Istanbul, the deal would have been very fruitful for Ukraine. Now you've got it where all of those areas in Ukraine is going to be Russia.
Yeah.
And they believe that the only way of ending this war is to militarily. They don't believe it can be done through negotiations. As you know, Lavrov's favorite statement, well-known statement, that the U.S. is deal incapable. Well, they believe that in Russia, and I think Iran's going to learn that as well.
Yeah, I do think you're right. So where does it stop? What do you think, they take Odessa? Do you think that they take the capital? How do you see that developing?
Yeah, I believe they're going to take Odessa. They're going to take all the different oblast regions. They're going to move in. You're already seeing the movement happen significantly into Ukraine. In terms of Kiev, obviously, they're already not too far away from Kiev. So I do think that the writing is on the wall when it comes to Russia. When it comes to Ukraine pertaining to Russia. And this is why you've seen Zelensky strike Tehran, strike Iran or an Iranian vessel, because he's hoping that Iran strikes them back. And Iran was planned to strike back, but I think they made the right decision not to. I don't know if they're going to do it or not, but I believe the right decision is just to ignore Zelensky, because he wants to bring Iran in, because Iran will decimate Ukraine. There's no doubt about it. But what's the benefit of further adding to more missiles when Russians are already hitting them so hard anyway? And so the logic behind it is you focus on the US, you focus on Israel, but Zelensky is desperate to merge it. And we are seeing the emergence of these war. It is becoming a world war. This is why you're seeing people like Laura Loomer go on these trips to Ukraine, Zionist, and trying to push for why America should support Ukraine, should help finance the war in Ukraine, as their position is in terms of Israel.
Right. And that just brings a whole nother thing into account, talking about this being a world war. Now, I view the European Union as kind of the weak sisters of the world. Like, they really don't have the ability to do much of anything. But like we've heard, and just originally, like Diego Garcia, it is a British protectorate. I do believe we've heard language from the British. Maybe they're going to get involved. Of course, intelligence, we already know MI6 is involved heavily with everything involved, especially Ukraine. Right. But what's the European role in any of these battles or wars to come that are already happening?
Yeah, great question. So as you mentioned, Diego Garcia was being used But Keir Starmer was kind of not allowing direct from the United Kingdom, direct B-1, B-2, B-52 bombers to go to Iran. They removed Keir Starmer, despite the fact that he's a Jewish Zionist leader, and replaced him with Andy Burnham, who I believe is a Christian Zionist. And you saw Andy Burnham essentially almost straight away, give the green light for B-1, B-2 and B-52 bombers to come from the United Kingdom to strike. And this is why Iran said that, look, you're using your country to strike us. You're going to become a legitimate target. Now, do I think Iran's going to strike the United Kingdom? I don't think so, but they could strike Diego Garcia. That is definitely within range. And they can strike other assets. But there again, I think Iran's playing the smart, because what the Americans and the Israelis are trying to do is to kind of and this is very clear what their plan is through Zelensky, through Andy Burnham, through the Europeans, is to try and dilute Iran's response. Because if Iran's trying to respond to the biggest, two biggest armies in the world, the two biggest military in the world, the US and Israel, and then they're going to try and fight the UK and then Europe and then Ukraine, you're going to be left diluted. Obviously, Iran is succeeding because they're dealing with this in an asymmetric warfare capability. They're not trying to go mano a mano with the United States of America. And so that's why they're succeeding. And so I think Iran is playing this in a prudent manner where they're not going after the UK. They're not going after, Ukraine. And they're playing this very smart. The UK is, as you mentioned, they're weak. If you look at the countries, the economy is weak. The people are struggling. You're seeing it through all of the decision making that's been made, whether it's Brexit, whether it's the support of the Russia-Ukraine war, whether it's the support of Israel's wars, all of these things, whether it's COVID, all of these things have harmed the UK economy and European economy significantly. And this is why those in power want to try and cause civil unrest within these countries to try and make it against Muslim, against non-Muslim, or white against black, or whatever it may be, because they know that the problems they've caused. And what we're seeing with the UK is not only are they causing problems in Iran, they're also causing problems in Russia. They're helping with the drones, building the drones with Ukraine. They're helping with a number of issues. And this is why even Russia has said that UK will be a target for them. The European countries will be a target for them, because Iran set a precedent, because Iran struck the Gulf nations that helped facilitate, support the strikes on Iran. Well, they're saying that, guess what? The UK is the same situation. UK and Europe, the same situation. You've helped Ukraine facilitate the strikes against us, and you will be open season. So Russia has laid out a warning to Europe. I had Dmitry Polyansky, a Russian governmental official, who said that they will be, and they are considering expanding the horizon of the battlefield to Europe. So this is where we get. So UK's got a measly army. They don't have the ability to fight, and yet they're trying to support two wars, which is just completely ridiculous.
Right, and we look at some of these long-range missiles, where that's the I forget what the British one is called. Is that called the Storm Shadow? Maybe I'm getting that wrong.
Yeah,
and there's other ones as well. I think Germany's also been involved in like heavy weapons manufacturing. It's ended up being used by Ukraine. Eventually, they are going to start hitting these factories, and then it's going to be the response from the West of, oh, we have to mobilize, we have to fight, they're attacking. It's a war of choice. It's an illegal war of aggression. That's the ultimate war crime. And if the population isn't aware of that, what's being done to them ultimately, you talk about the UK, you say struggling economy, struggling people, which means it's a weak country, it's not ready for war. Those people are going to be sold into giving away the last bits of freedom, economic mobility, economic opportunity that they have in order to fight an imaginary boogeyman that isn't even there. And it's truly disgusting and disturbing. That's why I think independent media is so important. We may not get everything right all the time, but we're trying to tell the truth. We're trying to look for the truth where it is. These people know what the truth is, and they lie. When Trump gets up there and he lies about the air defense, he knows it's not true. But he says it because enough people will believe it that he can make it reality. That's called magic, and it's forbidden by both of our religions. You're not supposed to do that. And he practices that, and that's the Kabbalah Talmudic rituals and other stuff that he's kind of been known for doing. And the whole idea that he can just manipulate the market over and over and over again and say, oh, it's all good, peace, and then back to war. Oh, it's all good, peace, and then go back to war. I think the global oil market is starting to buck that. What's your view on, petroleum futures, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, the SPR, is about to run out here, I think, within a week. I think in China, it's also struggling as well. What's your take on that?
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, when it comes to the futures market, obviously, we know it's heavily manipulated. So they do try and manipulate the market. They try and manufacture the price. Really, the oil prices should be a lot more higher. That being said, this is a point that I have been critical with Iran on. I do believe that, for example, when Ansarullah struck Saudi Aramco, the oil prices were going to fly. And then Trump basically stopped his strikes. Iran, in my view, should have continued. And that way you would have made sure the price escalated. Iran's position is that we only want to fight defensive war. And I'm like, wait a sec, but this whole thing is a defensive war. You got struck on 28th of Feb. But their position is, even in this specific minutiae aspect, each finite aspect is also they want to fight defensively. They're saying we don't want to go against our ethics and beliefs. And so therefore they stopped striking. But if they'd continue striking, the oil prices would have been really high. But in terms of, so that's in terms of the fake futures market, in terms of oil, obviously it's down, but we know what's the biggest issue in the United States of America. A couple of issues, which one of them you mentioned, which is, first of all, the oil reserves are depleting. I believe there's only weeks left of the oil reserves because there was a lull where certain vessels were getting out. But that's the first element. So you've only got weeks left in terms of the United States of America. China's been all right. China has gone into their oil supply, but at the same time, China's been getting a lot of oil out. And so, for example, if you look at it, even through the Bab al-Mandab, China is still getting oil out. Still through the Strait of Hormuz, China was still getting oil out. And then the other element is that the bond market, the bond yields are getting at very high. The 30-year yield is above 5%. People are selling their bonds off, which is going to be a huge catastrophe for the United States of America. And so what you're seeing is, because of all these things, you're going to see a major financial collapse at some point in the US. That's going to happen irrespective. We're guaranteed a recession in the West, likely a depression. So things are not looking great. And Trump doesn't care, because I think why Trump doesn't care is because he's not going to get impacted. The billionaire class, the trillionaire class are not going to get impacted. It's people like you and me. It's the working class people of America and UK and Europe. It's the world. It's
people
the
of the world. That yeah, 100%.
Are going to be affected. Exactly. It's just these people who won't get affected. That's why they're not bothered.
Wow. So I'm going to have a couple debates this week with people that say that, hey, it's not a war. You know, it's just a military engagement. It's just strategic. And they might say, oh, it's become a war now. But back in the initial 7-week period of the war, I'm going to debate somebody on Thursday that said that, hey, it's not a full scale war. You know, it's a limited conflict. Now, I think that's outrageous, obscene, and insulting to our soldiers that died in a war manufactured by Israel. And I think that dishonors them and their deaths. And that's my real position on that. And I want to know from you, what do you think about people that say this isn't a war? Still, they say it's not a war.
Well, it just shows their lack of understanding of military warfare, because what they, in their mind, the way they see it is, oh, guess what? There's going to be people and they're going to have guns out and they're going to be shooting at each other. Well, guess what? We don't live in the 1800s anymore. This is after 1945. Modern technology has developed significantly. Modern warfare has developed significantly. And so if you look at the mode by war, look, like, for example, even in Russia and Ukraine now, drones are being used even more so than even, men are, individuals are. And so similarly here, what have you got? So you haven't got a ground invasion. The reason you haven't got a ground invasion is because the US isn't capable. But anything except for that has happened. So anything except for ground invasion, nukes has happened. They've used all of their missiles, all the different types of missiles. They've used their drones. They've used their navy. They've used everything that they need to use in terms of Iran. Similarly, they've used all of those things. The U.S. bases have been hit throughout. So if that's not a war, what right. is a war? So if your definition is war is only a ground invasion, then that's not the definition of a war. We have seen a military war. We've seen a military incursion and a military fight between the two. It's just that the problem you've got is based on, and I do think that when you look at the military industrial complex, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, they scammed the Americans and the Brits, but obviously and Europe and the rest of the world, but the Americans so much, because what they did was they never developed advanced military capability. They never developed advanced defense interceptor missiles. They never developed great fighter jets. And what they did was they said, oh, guess what? This MQ-9 drone is worth $6 million. So, okay, the American public is going to pay for it. And look at them. They're useless. The F-35, which is meant to be America's most advanced fighter jet, is useless. And so what reality has happened is it is a war, but what you're seeing is the limited capability in terms of the way a war can be fought in modern warfare. And I've been a big believer, I've been saying this for many years, that when it comes to modern warfare, it's just become very difficult for an invading country to defeat a defensive country. So yeah, anyone who makes that argument, it just shows their lack of understanding of modern warfare.
Yeah, 100%. It's that post-World War II environment where they say, oh, it's a proxy war, it's a minor conflict, it's an engagement. And you look at the numbers on the ground, you're like, well, why are we spending hundreds of billions of dollars? And I would just say to people that don't think it's a war, killing the Pope, the equivalent, I know it's not one-to-one, but killing the Supreme Leader, the leader of like 200 million or however many Shia Muslims there are across the world, that's an act of war. And it's also a really bad idea. Here's my thing. It's like, I just don't want to mess with the Iranian people. Like, it just seems like a bad idea. And the leadership wants me to go fight and die over there. And then I got people telling me that I'm imagining it all and that I'm making stuff up and that it's not a war. So that really grinds my gears a little bit. I really appreciate your perspective. Suleiman Ahmed, where do people find you? Moral Resistance specifically, because I want to plug YouTube channels where, you know, you're talking about Ted Postol, talking about Robert Pape, talking about Larry Johnson, a number of others. Where can people find these interviews?
Yeah, very kind of you, Reza.
I'm a fan. I watch the show. I'm a subscriber. So
That's very kind of you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your work. You're doing great work and really value you, you know, using your network to tell people the truth, real information, real ideas, real thought. Really do value you as a person and as a human being. In terms of the channel, it is called Moral Resistance, and you can see it there. The Resistance on YouTube. We do 4 or 5 interviews every single day. I'll be on the ground. I was on the ground in Iran. I'm going to be on the ground in the Middle East again, reporting the news, real information, live in person. So do check us out. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time. Really appreciate that. We're going to be covering things as things develop, and I'm sure we're going to try to get you back on when I'm hosting the Alex Jones Show during the week. Thank you so much, Suleiman.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate you.
100%. All right. I will see you guys tomorrow for the Alex Jones Show. I'll be live 8 a.m. doing my morning show plug. 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Central. I'm your Huckleberry. I'm your guy. I'm the guy in the chair. It's a little nerve wracking for me, but I'm really, really excited. I got phenomenal guests loaded for bear every single day of the week. Thursday is going to be insane. I'm going to have Joe Ken on third hour, 1 p.m., 2 p.m. Central Time. And then, prospectively, hopefully, I'm going to have Andrew Wilson on in that fourth hour. Really looking forward to that. So be sure to follow me at Rex Jones News on Twitter, Rex Jones News on Instagram. That's Rex Jones News with a Z. Follow New American Journal. Follow me on Rumble. Follow New American Journal. That's the place to be, the place to go for the morning. And follow me at Gray Area Talks for the evening show. I'm building my own network here. I grew up. I'm taught how to do it, classically trained. I'm doing what I love. I'm doing what I know. Follow me there. New American Journal, Gray Area Talks, Rex Jones News with a Z on Twitter, on Instagram, really trying to build the Instagram up. And here's the thing. Did a great 3-hour show today. Love the products at thealexjonesstore.com. I really do. If you want to get super blue toothpaste and you want to get knockout sleep support, I have both of those. I have Brain Force. I have Brain Force Plus available for you at 50%off.com. Should you want to get it, I've got knockout right there. That is an absolute classic. So I just want to plug that really quick. And I'm going to be here in the chair in the big boy seat tomorrow. So stay tuned. I'm going to have a whole news roundup for you. Won't just be politics and war. I like covering that on the war room specifically. We're going to get into philosophy. We're going to get into domestic policy, immigration, AI, Mamdani. Everyone loves to talk about Mamdani. I'm going to do a whole segment on him tomorrow. You'll get what you want. You'll get what you crave. Go to The Alex Jones Show and go to AJN. Repost the links. Share the feeds. I'm just so happy to be here with you. I really am. And shout out to the crew. Love you all. See you tomorrow.
Is a massive sale going on right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Huge. Ultimate summer sale. 50% off Ultimate Power, Freedom Mango, and Patriot Punch. Methylene Red capsules. This is a proprietary product. It would take an hour to get into Ultra Methylene Red. The capsules are now in. Mind-fueled nootropic energy shots. All 50% off. 40% off zeolite tincture, detoxifying, go up for spike protein, and it's good for your whole body getting heavy metals out. Methylene blue tincture, 40% off. CMOS gummies, 40% off. Shilajit gummies, 40% off. Methylene blue gummies, 40% off. Ultimate chill, and a whole bunch of other big discounts as well. 30% off all apparel. The widest selection of Patriot shirts of every different design, configuration. It is the widest selection. It's over 800 different shirts. It's ridiculous. The new line that I designed is, I think, pretty good. Rebel scum since 1776. The Betsy Ross flag, less 1984, more 1776 in muscle shirts. Whole bunch of other really cool stuff now at thealexjonesstore.com. I love this lightweight, so-called dress shirt, but it's a very special type of shirt from a great manufacturer. We now have the boxer shorts, and they're not boxer-like underwear. You know, the classic boxer shorts that aren't long and aren't short. They're just kind of medium. They're my favorite type. I picked these out. I picked the brand. I said, this is the type of short I like. We're adding a lot of new apparel at thealexjonesstore.com. And every order right now, and it's about to end in the next few days, gets a free mystery T-shirt. You just put your size in. You get a free mystery T-shirt with every order that's $29 or more at thealexjonesstore.com. That is a hell of a deal right now. We've got the silver collectible 250-year anniversary with the amazing Jerusalem cross. Those are going to be gone soon. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And you stand with us, and you know that all the great work we're doing is because of you. You are the reason we're here. You are the InfoWar. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.